This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, some long-awaited good news. Malaysia is abolishing the death penalty. This was announced just earlier today by de facto Law Minister Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Junaidi. So first, we discuss the impact of this landmark decision. Then we look at what needs to be done to shore up our other institutions to support this moving forward. Tell us, what are your thoughts on the death penalty being abolished? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and as we mentioned, de facto law minister Dato' Sri Dr. Wan Junaidi Tuanku Jaafar released a statement today saying that the government has agreed to abolish the mandatory death penalty with substitute sentences to be imposed at the discretion of the courts. Now, according to him, this decision was made following his presentation of the report on the study of substitute sentences on mandatory death penalty at the cabinet meeting 2 days ago. And he added that the government has also accepted in principle the recommendations from the Special Committee to Review Alternative Sentences to the Death Penalty. So this Special Committee was headed by former Chief Justice Tun Richard Malanjum and includes legal experts as well as criminologists. So the Cabinet has also agreed to further study to be carried out on proposals to substitute sentences for 11 offences that carry the mandatory death sentence, one of which is under the Dangerous Drug Acts, and 22 other offences that also carry the death penalty. Needless to say, this is something that has been a long and hard-fought journey. There has been a lot of rejoicing at this announcement. This was supposed to have happened a little bit earlier, really, because a moratorium on executions had been in place since the Pakatan Harapan government introduced it in July 2018. But once that administration collapsed in 2020, the draft for the laws were, delayed. In the meantime, there has been a moratorium on the executions. So if you're looking forward, I think it's worth thinking about what this means in terms of how our criminal justice system functions. So according to the de facto law minister, the government will also be carrying out studies on the feasibility of the direction of the country's criminal justice system with things like establishment of pre-sentencing procedures, the forming of a sentencing council, the establishment of a law commission, as well as, in a larger sense, prison reforms and the execution of sentences based on restorative justice. It sounds like we're heading in the right direction, and I certainly do think that this announcement sets the right tone. But what we're going to be looking at after this is really first understanding the impact of this decision, and then moving forward, what sorts of changes we need to make to our adjacent institutions to ensure that this decision is supported, that people within the justice system get both the support and the help that they need. So we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the death penalty being abolished? This was just announced today. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Samantha Chong, human rights lawyer and drug policy reform advocate. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:12. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila, and today we're discussing the death penalty finally being abolished. It was announced just earlier today, so we would like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to discuss the impact of this decision is Samantha Chong, human rights lawyer and drug policy reform advocate. Samantha, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how did you react when you first heard that the government has finally pledged to abolish the death penalty?
I'm actually quite happy, and I feel that we have come a long way, and this government has finally agreed with us that we should at least abolish the mandatory death penalty.
What were some of the key turning points that have led to this moment?
I believe one, I mean, some of the reason might be because Malaysia is was elected to the United Nations Human Rights Council. So for the term of 2022 until 2024. And then there are some cases that have created public outcry. For example, the executions of Nagendran in Singapore, as well as one of the cases in Sabah where a single mother with 9 children was sentenced to death for a mass possession. So I think that shows that Malaysian society, actually we are ready for the abolishment of mandatory death penalty.
So what does this now mean for those who are, moving forward, tried for committing offences that carry the death penalty?
Although, actually, because when you look at the press statement, it does not indicate when the bill will be tabled, because the law remains the law unless a bill was tabled in the parliament and it was passed. And if you look at a press statement issued by the law minister carefully, that AG Chambers and the Legal Affairs Department will carry out further studies as to what are the alternative sentencing to death penalty. So I'm not sure if we can see whether the bill will be tabled for first reading, because Parliament will reconvene next month on 18 July. So if the law is the same, those who have been tried under the same section where mandatory death penalty is still there, they will still be sentenced to death penalty if they are found guilty, for example, murder. So the judge will not have an option to give life imprisonment or whatsoever, because the law remains the law. So you might ask, what happened if the law has been passed? Will it work retrospectively? So sadly, in Malaysia, the law doesn't work retrospectively unless the statutory, there is a written statutory provision that says so. But I think lawyers, if we can take this up, perhaps we can apply for resentencing once this amendment is passed, just like our counterparts in Singapore.
So in that case, then, how will this affect the inmates who are currently on death row?
Yes, so... If the amendment is being passed, but there is no provisions as to when this whether it will work retrospectively, I mean backdated, then I think perhaps we lawyers can start strategic litigation case to for the High Court, for the Federal Court to review the sentencing, because it is in the Federal Constitution that everybody are equal before the law. So it will be unfair for those who committed the same crime be hanged, and those who, after the amendments, will be given another sentencing. So I think it is a legal challenge that we need to put it up to, and it is worth the effort. So I think that will happen in the future.
Could you elaborate on the substitute sentences that have been proposed and how they could potentially be meted out?
So if you look at the press statement carefully, you will know that the cabinet has agreed on the abolishment of mandatory death penalty pursuant to the recommendations by a special committee. So that special committee was actually, I think it was in 2019. So, and the reports is still classified, I believe. So we do not know what are the sentencing proposed as an alternative. They are suggestions as to they should be given natural life imprisonment or life imprisonment, but I don't think the government has decided as to what is the alternative sentencing. Because if you look at our laws, there are at least 11 offences that carry the death penalties, and each should be done separately, whether it should be 20 years or whether it should be life imprisonment, 30 years. I think this has not been decided by the government yet.
So let's talk then about the laws that need to be amended for us to move forward with this decision. Briefly, what are those laws specifically and how do they tie to the death penalty?
So we need to look at three main laws, if I'm not mistaken. One is the Penal Code, whereby there are at least, I think, 9 offences in the Penal Code, including waging wars against the Yang Kedua Agong. All this will carry death penalty, and it is in the particular sections itself that the sentence shall be death penalty. So all these 9 offences in the Penal Code must be amended to provide an alternative. And then we also have the firearms increased penalty that need to be amended, as well as I would say the Dangerous Drug Act, you see. The Dangerous Drug Act was amended in 2017. Some say it is technically still carrying mandatory death penalty because if the requirements of the section was not fulfilled, there are certain requirements, there are about 2 to 4 requirements, then the judge will still have to pass death penalty. So these are the laws that I think should be amended. And then alternative sentencing needs to be included in this particular section itself.
What is the broader significance of this in terms of improving Malaysia's human rights record?
So death penalty has been internationally recognized as especially for drug offenses being disproportionate because there's no violence in terms of drug offenses. And if you look at it, 15 grams of heroin, you can be presumed to be a drug trafficker in Malaysia and you can be hanged. So international law would say that death penalty can only be imposed in a worst imaginable case, for example, like a brutal murder or some, these kind of cases. And so if we have at least abolished mandatory death penalty, it will certainly improve Malaysians' human rights records. But again, we still have a long way to go because we are just saying abolishing mandatory death penalty. Death penalty remains in our law. And as a former prosecutor, as a criminal practitioner, I have seen myself, on the ground that sometimes you don't have to even commit the crime yourself. But if you have a lawyer who have a miscommunications with you, will not ask important questions, you can still be sentenced to death, even though you do not commit the crime. So there are reasons why, it is an international law standard that death penalty is perceived to be cruel and inhumane. So I'll see that I believe that this is a giant step for us, for Malaysia, and our human records hopefully will be better in the future.
And briefly, the minister also said that the government will continue to study the feasibility of the direction of the country's criminal justice system. What do you hope to see in this regard?
I am very excited, but I have some concerns with it because, you see, when people talk about death penalty, the reason why they want to insist on death penalty is because they think that death penalty can reduce crime. And when the minister proposed that we should review the criminal justice systems, we should look at prison reform, sentencing counsel, retrospective justice, all these are actually the right solution, the correct solution towards crime reductions. Because we don't see, there's no evidence to suggest that death penalty can reduce crime. And crime happens because of, poverty, because of, it can be reduced with strategic policing. Even better town planning can help with reducing crime. And in terms of prison reform, this is very important because from my experience, actually, no criminal will suddenly jump from petty criminal directly to a murderer or drug trafficker. Some things might have happened in between. Normally, they will be in and out the prison for many, many times. So we need to ask ourselves, is our system good enough to reduce crime? Because we know that death penalty is only a shortcut, it's only a band-aid solution. It does not solve the problem, but it only is only there as if somebody is, being given a death sentence after committed a crime. If death sentence is given, then as if we have done something, the government has done something to reduce crime, but actually it is not the case. People will still commit crime, people will still go for drug trafficking, even though there's death penalty, because the money from illicit drug markets is tremendous. It is into billions of USD. So what are the solutions? The solutions are there, actually, is to bring people who are addicted to drugs for treatments, for evidence-based treatment. This is how we can solve our drug problems. The solution might not be very simple. It can take a lot of resources, time, but that is the right way to go. Instead of having death penalty and totally ineffective way of solving crime.
So this is really the first step. What needs to happen next for capital punishment to be done away with for good?
So I believe Malaysians, you know, we are not actually ready for the total abolishment of death penalty. Looking back in 2018, the late Dato' Wikelu has, you know, actually said that the Malaysians will go totally abolish death penalty. But the outcry was just too much. And looking back at history, death penalty has never been abolished based on popular votes. Abolishing death penalty is something not popular in terms of politically. So it will take the government a lot of courage and will to go on. But hopefully with the abolishment of mandatory death penalty, people can start to see that there are actually other alternatives. And to start with the total abolishment first, I think let's just abolish mandatory death penalty first. And we need to strengthen our criminal justice system and the prison reform so that people can actually open their eyes that death penalty is not the ultimate solution for crime reduction.
Samantha, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Samantha Chong, human rights lawyer and drug policy reform advocate, on the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty. We'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be looking at our larger institutions and what needs to change to support this decision moving forward. And for that, we'll be joined by Dobby Chu, Executive Coordinator of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network. But we do have time for some messages. We've got so many coming through already. Let's see. We have Annie saying, the death penalty was never the best penalty to exist. Not only does it violate basic human rights of living, it's also a less suffering way for the guilty to compensate for what they've done. It would bring no justice to the victim. The abolishment of this law might be a new step for our country, turning forwards to a more towards a more fairer country. Agreed on the human rights aspect that the death penalty has long been something that contravenes, I think, by any regard, what we consider human rights. TIDJ meanwhile says, I'm happy with the announcement, but I must stress that it is only a statement that the cabinet agrees to it. It will have to be debated and passed in parliament to make the amendment to the penal code, and I wonder how long that'll take. It's a good first step. I hope we'll eventually abolish capital punishment in its entirety. Yes, I agree. And I think it is worth remembering that this is just the first step. And that, as our guest Samantha Chong said earlier, while the mandatory death penalty has been abolished, it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist as an option within the legal system. So there is a journey yet to go through before we get there. Sam says, yes, finally, respect for human life. We have the power to punish someone, but the power of taking a person's life away is not in our hands. Otherwise, we're no different from murderers. With the death penalty, it's like murdering with a reason. I think that's actually a fair thing, right? Like that our justice system, and I would add to that the justice system shouldn't just be about punishing. I think the justice system should also be about rehabilitating. And that's what this idea of restorative justice means, which I hope is what we're moving towards. Keep those thoughts coming. What do you make of the death penalty being abolished? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And today we are looking at an announcement from the de facto law minister that Malaysia is abolishing the mandatory death penalty. So we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we get to our next guest, I think we have time for some messages. Let's see, we have May saying, this is the best news I've ever heard. Malaysia is really progressing at last. My long wait for many, many years, hooray for the abolishment. I think that sentiment is being echoed by quite a number of people. Let's see, we have Dr. Fadzli saying, this is great for justice. This will provide more room for judges to use their wisdom in deliberating each and every case in the future. We have Alwan, who called earlier, who says, I think this is good news for Malaysia today. I'm a social worker, so I visit and talk to prisoners on death row, and I would like to share this good news with them when I visit them the next time. Nobody has the right to kill. I think that Malaysia has taken a good step in the right direction. Firstly, thank you for the work you do. But yes, I do think that especially those who work with people directly, people on death row, people facing potential sentencing, this has been something that's being celebrated across the board. A couple of dissenting opinions, which I think we have some time for. Rui Wei, meanwhile, says, my own view is that the death penalty shouldn't be abolished. It can be divided into absolute and opposite. At the same time, the death penalty should be used with caution and shouldn't be abused. Meanwhile, Tingo says, I think the abolishment of the death penalty is reasonable, because it might be a mistake and a criminal can get wrongly convicted. However, it might also appear to have, it might also become another problem, how the government should handle these criminals who commit serious crimes. And also, there needs to be a reasonable explanation to the victims' families, so then it might be contradictory. So, to be fair, I think there are alternative sentencings that are being discussed. And I don't necessarily think that the death penalty is the only way in which justice can be served. And in fact, in some ways, I think it could be argued that moving towards a system that prioritizes rehabilitation and restorative justice might in the long term serve everyone better as well, instead of just the death penalty, which has often also proven to not deter criminals in the first place. So keep those thoughts coming. What are your thoughts on the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to look at the larger changes we need to put in place as we move forward with this decision, we're joined by Dobby Chu, Executive Coordinator of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network. Dobby, good to have you back with us.
Hello, good to be back.
So as someone who's been actively pushing for this for a long time, how do you feel about the news?
I'm cautiously optimistic because like one of the calling the message just now to say, you know, we are a good starting line kind of situation. But to me, it's like this is the second time we are on this line in the last 5 years. So cautious but optimistic.
How does this stack against trends that you're seeing within the region, particularly considering the recent spate of executions that took place in Singapore?
I think it's not just our region, it's globally we've been seeing this decline. Even, I like to use the worst example because they're always the best to refer to in this kind of situation. Vietnam has scaled down death penalty in the recent years with some of their penal code reforms, so they remove pregnant women, children, and elderly. China has done something similar, not exactly legal reform per se, but they have centralized their death sentencing to a centralized committee in their capital so that there's less regional abuses or discrepancy in a sense. Philippines, who has been very much on about reintroducing the death penalty and also has a lot of extrajudicial killing for drug offenses, they have also withdrawn from that position in the recent election. So when you look at it, the trend is going away from the death penalty, unless except your Singapore.
The government has proposed substitute sentences, and we've spoken about this quite a bit in the first part of our show. How will this impact our drug offence laws, and what sorts of changes do we need within our system to accommodate those alternate sentences?
So the drug offence law will be a bit interesting because we didn't used to have the death penalty until Mahathir introduced it in the 70s. And that was in a discretionary form. And I assume if the government decide to bring back that discretion for judges, then we'll go back to that 1975-77 kind of position. But I think looking at it now, with the knowledge of hindsight and how the drug trade actually manifests itself, I think just looking at the sentence itself is not enough anymore. We also need to look at the role of the drug trade and who's involved in it. Like, for example, when you look at Nagendran's case and a lot of other cases, these are not big shot drug traffickers, right? These are drug mules. Should they be seen as the same as someone involved in the drug trade itself? Probably not, because they are not necessarily someone who benefits from the trade. They are someone who's exploited as someone to carry out the deeds, right? If I have to give an analogy, right? Lazada is selling things. The FedEx guy, the Ninja Van guy, they deliver stuff. In this case, someone else is selling, but you're getting the FedEx, the GDEX, the Ninja Van people. Is that fair, right? It's an offense, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's possible to put the maximum sentence for people who are just carrying out the will of another, if that makes sense.
So overall then, what kind of impact would this change to our drug laws have on our current justice system?
The pessimistic part of me would say not a lot. Because we have had an amendment in 2017 that has offered judiciary partial discretion. And this is very much reflective of what Singapore has. But within the last 5 years, we have had two successes out of 71 person that was charged for drug trafficking. So that's a very low percentage. And if you're wondering what Singapore looks like, Singapore had about 104 cases over 10 years and only 14 person end up on death row. So when you look at the percentage proportionality, ours is very, very low. So to me, when I look at it, it's just giving some degree of discretion is not enough. It needs to be contextualized. And I think part of the problem is not that judiciary is conservative and wants the death penalty, but the whole stage and structure, right? From the moment the person is arrested, they are treated as the most serious criminal deserving death. Prosecution prosecutes that way. And of course, sentencing follows that way down the road. So I think that needs to be a very big shift in how all this is considered after this for there to be substantial change.
We'll continue our conversation after this. We are discussing the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty and how our institutions need to be strengthened to support this. We'll continue our conversation with Dobby Chu, Executive Coordinator of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network. Do keep sending your thoughts through. What are your thoughts on the death penalty being abolished? That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:45. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila, and we're discussing the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty, which was announced just earlier today by the de facto law minister. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. What do you make of this? What are your thoughts on the death penalty being abolished? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Dobby Chu, Executive Coordinator of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network. Dobby, in a larger sense, how might this decision shift the way we as a society, think about crime and restorative justice?
This would be, I think, one of the biggest thing or the one that really sparks a reform or change. Because I think when we start looking at why shouldn't we hang someone who had murdered someone, who had killed someone, I think it forces us to ask the question, what is justice? Where do we come in as a society to condemn a crime? And what do we do with the person who has done the crime? It's very easy when it's death penalty is there, because you can just say, hang the guy, be done with it. We don't spend any time or money or concern for the person. But when we start saying that we shouldn't hang the person, it starts bringing out the conversation. What do we do with him then? Keep him in prison forever? Do we try to rehabilitate him? Do we try to understand him? I think that conversation, once it hits, then people start realizing that it's not as simple anymore. We start figuring out what got these people in this situation in the first place and how do we get them out of it. And I think that's the one that really changes how crime is work or seen as work or treated, and how we can start reducing crime rates as opposed to just saying we'll do harsher punishment and hope that people stop committing crime.
So this is a sentiment that's come through a number of times from our listeners. So I'm going to get you to respond to it. We have this from Shiram, but we had a few others earlier as well who touched on the same thing. Shiram says, I fully support the removal of the mandatory death penalty, but not the total abolishment of the death penalty. It should be reserved exclusively as a punishment for the most heinous crimes, but not used as a deterrent, because deterrent sentences are inherently unjust. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the deterrent sentence part is really clear. I don't think that works. There's no evidence that it has worked anywhere, and it's not going to change anytime soon. Now, the part to retain it for the most heinous crime, I think it's something that if you look at India maintains the same position, right? The rarest of the rare, the worst kind of crime you can imagine, which really goes down to it. Then I've got to put the counter question then. What do people think about when they see this kind of crime? Rape slash murder, gruesome murder, multi-murder, multiple homicide by one person, school shooting. There's a lot of very heinous crime that you can think of, right? But then when you turn it around, are these people of the right state of mind? Because when we start looking at those people who commit crime, it's quite rare you find a person to say, I have plotted someone's murder and I have executed my plan because I really don't like the person. And even when you do have a person like that, when you speak to doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, they'll tell you this person is not quite right. A normal right-minded person wouldn't think that. So when we start looking at the most heinous crime, I think also need to think about who's committing it. It's very different from when you commit a political or corruption offense where it's seen as a victimless crime, right? it's easy for some people to commit it. I'm not going to say anyone, but you know, it's easy for some people to commit it and get away with it and thinking that I'm good, I'm fine, I'm a good guy. But when you want to murder someone, to have someone to still walk away and think they're right, it's psychologically, I don't think it's that easy. So I think when we say we want to keep it for most heinous crime, we should also keep in mind, what crimes are they? Are those people who committed it really of the right state of mind? If they are not, why are we punishing them for something they are not in control of?
Based on what you've observed in other countries that have abolished the death penalty, what are some issues we need to manage in this transition phase that we're in?
So the big first concern is always that we are going to have a big spike in homicide rate. Everyone's going to grab a knife and it's going to be the killing outside. Of course, doesn't happen, right? I mean, for Malaysia, I think we have the benefit of having a moratorium in place for the last 5 years for murder, for almost a decade now for drug trafficking. And we can see that having death penalty, not having death penalty, does absolutely nothing to the crime rates. Maybe PDRM can give more data on this moving forward in discussion. But at the moment, when we look at it, do you feel that the crime rate has gone worse, especially very serious crime involving murder? Probably not. And if it doesn't happen, then the biggest concern people have that it would not deter future crime, people will go crazy and start stabbing each other, is not a concern. So that's one of the bigger ones. The next big one, I think, is really to deal with how people feel that because we just got rid of death penalty and things used to be good when we can punish very heinous crime with the death penalty. I think it's how to navigate, especially from government's perspective, how to navigate this kind of heinous crime. Like tomorrow, for example, if we suddenly have someone that took up a knife and just stabbed like 10 children in the playground, people are going to call for the person to be hanged. How does government navigate that conversation between really, really encompassing the rehabilitative justice or the restorative justice for victims? How do they work with victims to make sure they are cared for, they are counseled, they are given the right grief counseling? And how do we treat the person who committed the crime? Do we see it as a societal issue, a mental health issue, whatever issue it is? We can't just say, we'll prosecute him, we'll hang him, and that's justice. So I think that navigation of the first few heinous crimes must be really, really nuanced, because that will set the stage of what people think, is this justice or not? And I think if we don't achieve that conversation well enough, it's very possible we'll snap back to Philippines where they suddenly say, no, we need this for drug trafficking. And there's no reason to it, right? It's just a sense of belief this is going to work.
So now that this decision has been made, what measures do we need to put in place to ensure the rights and well-being of prisoners who are currently on death row?
So of the 1,355, 400 is for murder. So those, I think, will need some degree of consideration to really understand what led them to commission the crime. We don't have data in Malaysia, but when we see studies done in India, for example, a lot of those on death row are people with mental health issue, history of childhood abuse, psychosocial traumas, and other kind of issues that kind of contributed to them committing a crime. And we see that kind of trend a lot in countries where studies are done, like in the US and things like that. So for those categories for murder or serious violent crime, we definitely need to really sit down and identify what is the cause. And if it's economic crime like gangsterism and, you know, this kind of whacking people because for economic profit, then that's a whole different problem to deal with. But at least we need to know what kind of people are there. For the drug offenses one, it's a lot simpler most of the time because it's a non-violent crime. So it's really to look at it and see, can they be rehabilitated to society? If they are drug users slash pushers, then, you know, there is the medical concern of getting rid of addiction that needs to be considered. If they are someone who is just peddling, have they served their time? Are they rehabilitated when they come out? Is there a way to reintegrate them in society without getting involved in the drug trade again? So I think that's that part element of it. And what people don't really see is the 1,000+ people on death row, they are kept essentially like animals. They are kept in solitary confinement. They are giving maybe an hour to 2 hours of free time or yard time a day. They barely see anyone, if at all. And when they do see their family, it doesn't mean they can hug their family or even have a proper, you know, face-to-face communication. It's just through a layer of wall. Once they're off the death row, right, they start being treated like normal prisoners. They start being able to attend classes. They start being able to work in prison to kind of provide some degree of money for themselves. They start being able to be a human again. And I think that's the important part, to heal them, to make sure that they know that there's a life outside. They can rehabilitate themselves and be part of that life. And I think prison has been very successful with this. And so far, there's no reason to force doubt their findings on this kind of rehabilitative treatment. So I think it's really just understanding who these people are, how we can help them reintegrate with society in a safe way that doesn't cause them to commit crimes again. Or, you know, if they are not safe yet or they need further rehabilitation, how do we deal with it?
On the other hand, then, what aspects of our rehabilitation strategies need to be strengthened, especially now?
So I'm not an expert on this. I think it's always good to find someone who is a better expert on this if we have any in Malaysia. But I think first is really to get them out of the crime circle, right? We see a lot, especially in drug offences. This is always the recurring theme. Someone who is addicted to drugs is usually ostracized in a lot of ways by community, family, and friends. So when they go into prison, suddenly it's solidarity everywhere because everyone's my buddy, everyone does drugs. That kind of network and chain that binds people, we need to make sure we have a way to get them off it as our rehabilitation, right? To make sure that break that chain. For those that are forced into crime because of economic circumstances, like those petty theft, robbery, and things like that, what got them there? We need to break that chain. It's like any serious syndicate-based crime you want to deal with, you need to make sure that people don't go back to the syndicate or they can't be exploited or it's harder to exploit it. And how do you do that? It's essentially telling them there's a better life out there. You don't need to do this. This is how you can get in touch. This is how you're supported. So right now, probably one prison rehabilitation, making sure they can learn the right skill that makes them employable outside once they go out, to make sure employers are incentivized to be able to hire these people who have prison record. I think like Shaikh Sadiq in the past has done it for his when he was the youth minister, they have hired some ex-inmates. And once they're outside, I think the really important one is making sure that they are cared for, not in the wealth and financial sense alone, but the communal sense, right? That they have a community they can go back to, which becomes very important for us to have halfway homes, places where people can stop by, get acclimated to society again, have someone to, not to hold their hand, they don't need handholding, but someone to tell them that it's okay, we are here for you, you can fail, but we must never give up and we must move on. So I think those structure needs to be there in one way or another. And once we have that, I think we can really see how crime is treated and how crime can be reduced. It will be a lot different from what we have now.
Dobby, in closing, what should we be keeping an eye on as this situation develops?
So usually I'll be saying there's like a million things government needs to do, but looking at the minister's statement, it's actually quite good. I think he has taken up a lot of the recommendation by the special committee set up by Dato' VK Liu, which of course has a big, big, big influence in what's happening now. Sentencing and sentencing guidelines, right? So the social aspect that we just discussed can be done by prison itself or by civil society or by charitable groups. But the guidelines of sentencing and how prosecution is handled, when death penalty should be implemented, if at all, how police should deal with people the moment they're arrested. This kind of policy needs to come from the Attorney General office and also to a large extent PDRM. So once they figure out those equations, then I think that's the part I want to really look at to see how they hash it out. Because like right now, you can have all the best laws, but if it's not implemented at all stages, we are going to be back at square one again.
Dobby, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Dobby Chew, Executive Coordinator of the Anti-Death Penalty Asia Network, weighing in on the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty and the larger changes that we need to make to our various institutions to accommodate this. We would like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the death penalty being abolished? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We can wrap up with a couple of messages. We have Roshan saying, on the abolishment of the death penalty, I'm more mixed. I can see why people agree on either side. However, I think in the end, Malaysia needs something to take over the death penalty, such as stricter laws. And, you know, Roshan, to be fair, there are substitute laws being proposed. There isn't a lot of clarity on what these might look like. But I do think that it's not as if the death penalty is going to be taken away and then we have no other measure to account for justice. And we will be reporting on this as well as there are more developments to talk about. Jingwan, meanwhile, says, I think it's very good news that our government decided to abolish the death penalty. Firstly, it's not ethical because we don't have the right to take someone's life. Yes, and I think that that's something that we can celebrate as we move forward and hopefully also keep the government to account and make sure that we go all the way and eventually do away with capital punishment overall. Keep those thoughts coming. What are your thoughts on the death penalty being abolished? That number to call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.